While that's loading, I'll talk a little bit about Enterprise Community Partners, which is the organization of which my program is a part of. And Enterprise has been in existence for 30 years now, and it provides resources in terms of technical and financial support towards the development of affordable housing throughout the country. And since its inception, it's actually supported 300,000 homes throughout the country. So we're really proud of that accomplishment and continue to scale that for the next 30 years. And in 2004, we launched our Green Communities program, which is a program focused on integrating green building practices into the development of affordable housing and in a holistic way that addresses strategies that promote health, conserve energy, protect natural resources, as well as provides direct access to affordable transit. So taking all the core elements of green building practices within the affordable housing space. And it's important to note that in 2004, USGBC's leadership in energy and environmental design was in existence, however, it solely focused on the commercial sector. So when we launched our Green Communities program, we really wanted to be intentional about bringing these benefits within the affordable housing sector. And really quickly, I wanted to just identify some of the items that we really focus on in terms of defining green. So as you know, there's many ways of defining green, but we work very closely with members of the USGBC, along with health experts and experts in smart growth practices, to establish a criteria, which is listed on this slide here, that goes into the core elements that need to be integrated within affordable housing to yield those health, economic, and environmental benefits. Again, really focusing on the people that we serve. And all of that, and that work in particular really set the groundwork and the foundation for our experience going in 2009 to become a weatherization service provider in New York City in particular. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with the weatherization program, it's a program administered by the U.S. Department of Energy that allocates resources to states to support low-income families in reducing their energy bills. So weatherization, as you know, I'm sure you've heard the term weather stripping and other elements that focus on energy upgrades that really protect low-income families from energy price escalation. And this program has been in existence for about 33 years now and has supported 6.4 million homes throughout its existence. So it's a really impressive federal program that allows for direct support to low-income families and protecting them from energy escalation threats. And interestingly enough, in 2009, as many of you know, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act provided a huge infusion of resources towards the weatherization program in the amount of $5 billion, which essentially expanded its scale and its support. And it was through that ARRA funding that we were awarded over $2 million to provide weatherization services to over 2,000 multifamily households within New York City, and we formed a joint partnership with a similar organization by the name of Local Initiative Support Corporation to form this weatherization service agency. And through that work, I just really wanted to mention it was really an experience for us to establish trying to ensure that as we were going in to address the energy upgrades that we were also focused on health and safety, because interestingly enough, the health and safety measure requirements within weatherization are somewhat limited based on our experience in creating healthy living environments, ensuring that ventilation is up to code. There's focus on combustion safety, which is really important, especially when we went to some of these multifamily households and found that CO monitors just weren't working. There were gas leaks, more gas leaks than I could ever hope. It was somewhat of a nightmare to see. You know, you never want to anticipate that many gas leaks within a multifamily property, but it happened. So with that said, we, in collaboration with LISC, really focused on addressing ventilation items that were somewhat outside of the weatherization scope, and we were able to cobble together resources to address that because to a certain extent weatherization funds were not able to cover some of those requirements. So the reason this is really important, we estimate that within the next decade, over 1 million homes will be, through weatherization and other federal, state, and local programs, undergo energy upgrades. So it's a tremendous opportunity to ensure that we integrate health along with those energy upgrades to really ensure that we are creating healthier, stable homes, particularly within low-income communities. And really quickly, just wanted to go through some of the building science components of this, and I'm sure my fellow panelists will go into this in much more detail in terms of the elements, the control strategies that need to be in place when talking about the improvement of indoor air quality. So again, really ensuring that you're reducing the level of toxins within the home, ensuring that you're sealing the homes to ensure that heating and cooling doesn't escape, to create comfortable environments, as well as ventilation to ensure that the level of fresh air is circulated regularly, along with filtering that air as well to, again, minimize the exposure to contaminants. And I just wanted to share just a couple of studies that we've been touting for the past few years that demonstrate the health benefits of integrating healthier building practices within affordable housing, because within our realm, within the development community, if you will, it's really hard to make the health case. I'm speaking to the converted here within a health conference. However, talking to a developer, they really want to see the monetary benefits. So energy and water impacts are an easy sell. When we start talking about ventilation, if it's not required by code, we tend to see pushback because there are cost implications for building in ventilation systems, and they don't necessarily see the direct monetary impact. So what we've been trying to do through our health research, including work that we've been in conversations with the San Francisco Department of Public Health, has been around proving the societal benefit of integrating healthy building practices within housing, because it does have an indirect societal benefit in terms of reductions in medical costs, as well as lost school and work days. So we're really trying to demonstrate that case much more holistically and comprehensively. So this is a study that was published in last year's January edition of the American Journal of Public Health, and it was a study conducted by Jim Krieger out in Seattle. It was the Breathe Easy Home Study. Hopefully you all have been familiar with this study. It was a study of Seattle Housing Authority's homes that were really designed to enhance the quality of the indoor environment for these residents. And the study found that there were tremendous improvements in quality of life, as well as reductions in urgent care needs. So this is one that has been vetted, that we cite very often to demonstrate the benefits of healthier, breathe easy homes, if you will. The next two I'll go through really quickly, because these are Green Communities properties that we supported very early on in the program. This was a property in Worthington, Minnesota. It was redeveloped in 2006, and this was a property that was in really dire straits before. As you can see the photo above, it was really unfortunate that people actually lived there, quite frankly. But we went in and evaluated the residents pre and post. It was a substantial renovation of a 50-unit property in Worthington, Minnesota, that really focused on improving the heating systems, because, of course, in Minnesota it gets pretty cold. And interestingly enough, we did find, through self-reported data, significant improvements in general health, because along with the focus on the energy upgrades, we focused on improving the indoor environment. This building suffered from mold issues and issues with moisture, so that did elevate the quality of the households once we went in and integrated the health as well as the energy upgrades. This is another study of a property in D.C. This is called Wheeler Terrace. This is a property that is actually going for USGBC's LEED Gold certification. This will also include a geothermal heating system in D.C., which is somewhat unique. But again, as you can tell, this property was in disrepair, and we actually did work with the tenants association of this property. The residents were really involved in not only the study itself, but in the renovations to the property, because they just felt that their environment really needed to be upgraded. And we're seeing this more and more within our affordable housing communities, that residents are engaging and collectively demanding healthier environments. Energy is sort of something that they care about, but the healthier environments is what they really ask for when we start the design process. And this is the most recent study. The results are still being vetted, but we worked with the National Center for Healthy Housing through a HUD-funded study to compare pre and post residents' pre and post energy improvements, and this was tied to the weatherization work that we did in New York City, and we targeted 200 households within the 21 households that we supported to evaluate pre and post the connection to health in terms of the energy upgrades that we focused on. So within our weatherization program, as you can see, we really focused on energy upgrades that affected the heating of the buildings, as well as certain aspects in the ventilation, such as insulation. And this goes into sort of the process for which we collected the data for this study, and it was a really interesting process because in going in, again, I'm from New York City, we have a very, very diverse population, as does San Francisco. So as a result of that, we had to get really creative in terms of our outreach. As you can see within this slide, these were just some recruitment posters that we posted within each of the properties, and one is in Mandarin, one is in Russian. We had to do one also in Korean and Cantonese, as well as Spanish. So it got really, it really enabled us to think through how we engage other residents to help with the surveying and recruitment process, because there were some language barriers, but it did create a little bit, the unintended benefit of that was that it actually created more engagement from households that were helping us collect information. And really quickly, I threw this slide up for the scientists in the room mainly to go through the results of this study. And I wanted to note one item in particular that we're still trying to figure out, sort of what was the unintended consequence of this level of evaluation, because as well as our weatherization work, because the third bullet here indicates that we did see in certain instances that asthma indicators actually worsened after the improvements were made. So we're still vetting that. One item that we are trying to control for is that one of the properties that were part of the evaluation site sample set was a senior property. So we wanted to ensure, so we need to figure out whether or not that had a confounding factor in our results. So really briefly, I think I have 5 minutes left here, I just wanted to go through some of the study conclusions, because it really is it's really helping us to make the case that more research is required to continue to connect improvements on energy to health, as well as the direct benefit of ventilation to health improvements. Because as I mentioned earlier, as we're targeting the development community to make different decisions in how they upgrade their properties, it's really important to demonstrate through vetted research why this is important. And really quickly, I just wanted to, because I think it's really important, as I mentioned earlier, to really bring the residents, because we work in mainly multifamily properties, to bring the residents into the equation as you think about healthier building practices, because energy is just one side of the equation. We know that once these properties are built and someone moves in, they have full reign on how those systems are operated and what levels of toxins go into the household. So we've been spending a lot of time over the past past 3 years focusing on how best to raise the level of awareness of the residents that we serve around conservation. So these are just a suite of tools that we make available on our website for free that are easily customizable to your population to ensure that you're just raising their level of awareness around healthier cleaning practices, energy conservation, water conservation, as well as waste. And here are just a couple of examples of communities across the country that have actually utilized some of these resources. And what's interesting about this one, which is one of my favorites, is Abode Communities in Los Angeles, California, really used the resources as a way of integrating activities within their after-school program. So the youth were able to develop videos to show to their parents as well as others in the community about sort of what things to consider in terms of recycling. And then really quickly, this was another example in again Minnesota that goes through the level of engagement for residents. And through this process, they actually did work very closely with their residents to just hear from them what they care about. And interestingly enough, public safety was a huge concern. And that, again, allowed the community development organization to think about how to address those concerns that the residents have around public safety, because it prevents them from going outside or being more active. And this is just one of my favorites because this is a senior property in New York that used this resource as a way of engaging their communities, because social isolationism within senior housing is such an issue. But allowing some of this content to build community is really important, so everyone can sort of rally around a similar goal in terms of conservation. So in closing, because I think I have just a minute left, I did want to, I did want to just stress that I'm coming at this from the development perspective. Within affordable housing, it is really important to ensure that we are creating healthy communities, and as the California Endowment's campaign has shared, health does happen everywhere, and it mainly happens in the home. So I hope that some of the information that I've shared with you has been helpful and useful, and I look forward to your questions.